Where'd you find this?
It's Friday.
It's ladies' night. We're at 99. Episode 99.
It's our last one. It's our last. Yeah, it's over. Our last yeah, numbers episode.
This is our last episode ever.
Hope you liked it. We can't be wrong for the takes we had because this podcast is ending. So hope you enjoy the season.
Yeah. Yep. At the end of the episode, we'll reveal the true killer. yeah, we're 99. It's Friday night. I'm here. I'm Tony. Craig's here. Shane's here. Ryan's here. Shane, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I love the scrum. I know everybody was bitching about that shit, but give me my Jalen Hurts points every week like that, please.
I'm with you.
Yeah, that was, he had some really good passes to Smith, and he got those two touchdowns, and man, he had a great game.
He's him.
Yep. Ryan, how you feeling?
Very distraught with Christian Kirk, and I'm very sorry to anyone that took my advice last week, but it's only the first week. Tony's kind of put me back to earth. I got so mad during the beginning of the week, especially after the Jets won in that game on Monday night. I almost texted Tony. I was like, I'm done with the podcast. That's it. I hate this week. Even though I had a lot of good takes, you know, Laporta and stuff. But
if we're hitting 60%, man, like we miss people, right? Like Calvin Ridley, my bad, dog. My bad.
Jags still won, but
that team looks, you know, good. Like really
After I went into some numbers against KC from last year, he had like 16 receptions, I think, against both games in KC last year, and almost 200 yards, a couple touchdowns. He should do good because they you know, Kansas City generally runs the man coverage, so.
And they also don't pay $20 million for a guy to sit on the bench, right? He's going to get his. It's just week one is fluky. You can victory lap on the things you like, and then if you're wrong on shit, it's just week one, so whatever.
Right. Right now, Christian Kirk is on pace for 16 catches on the year.
Those are Drake London numbers.
Well, speaking of, let's hop in before we do our 99s. Let's do our segment zero real quick. It's a buy or sell. So I'm going to name a player, and I'll mention the relevant stat line, and you tell me if you're buying the week one performance, you think it's going to stay roughly, you know, similar to this, or if you're selling and you think this was just a flash in the pan. You guys ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. First, Shane, since you just said it, Drake London, one target, no catches. Are you buying or selling?
That's fake news, bro. Like we talked about in the offseason, man, he's going to be wide receiver two, wide receiver three at worst. Like, it's game one. They didn't have to do more than they had to do. I know everybody hates Arthur Smith, but he's playing actual football. And I think that's the separation of like the fantasy sphere from like actual football, where this guy's like, hey, I'm trying to keep my job. We're doing enough. Like, they're going to throw the ball 300 times this year. He's going to get his. It's just going to come in unpredictable times.
And that offense is always going to be run heavy. I mean, look, they got the number one running back pick from this year and a really good running back pick from last year in his sophomore season, who actually had more touchdowns than Bijan, but Bijan's going to emerge back. All they want to do is run. I think, though, because of the game script in that one, there's going to be tons of games where they're going to be playing from behind. They're going to have to
this week.
Yeah.
So Ryan, I'm assuming you also don't think that this is going to hold up. Are you buying Drake London low?
As Jim Cramer once said, I'm buy.
All right. Are you guys in? Are you buying or selling? Josh Kelly, 16 carries, 91 yards and a touchdown. Ryan.
I am now that Eckler's out. Pretty sure they said he's not going to play, or at least he's doubtful.
He's not traveling with the team right now.
Yeah, so he's not playing.
Would you still be buying if Eckler was healthy?
Yes, because Eckler's, he's 30 now, and Chargers got to start looking for, you know, the future of their run game, and Josh Kelly showed that he can handle it.
They put up 200 yards last week, the number one rushing offense in the NFL. If you told me that last year, I would have been like, this person is insane. There's absolutely no way that happens, right? We fixed the rushing offense. We don't have a defense anymore. But right.
And they scored, and the Chargers scored, the third most points outside of Dallas and Miami, who they played in that shootout.
Yep.
You know,
I'm just going to say Josh Kelly, my second highest rostered back in best ball. So I've been in on Josh Kelly.
Yeah.
But like that's the purpose of that. What we did this exercise off season, dude, is we looked at coaching schemes and we picked out who does what where and who fills that role. Guess what? You called Josh Kelly. He does the Tony Pollard thing or the Zeke thing.
Yep.
Sorry.
The Zeke thing. Yep. All right. So let's move on to the hot name. Puka Nacua, 10 catches, 119 yards. Shane, you buying or selling?
It's tough, right? Like he's going to get 3 for 30 this week. And people are going to be really mad about it. But I think, like, I've seen a lot of comparisons to him doing, like, the Robert Woods thing. But like you were saying earlier, is he's with the quarterback who force feeds one guy. And until Cooper Kupp comes back, which is hypothetically, according to Sean McVay today, week 5 against the Eagles, which I don't think is going to happen. It's his...
That's the first day he's eligible from IR, but...
Yeah. I think he'll be... frustrating to start, right? Like if he's your flex play, you're doing great, but I think everybody who lost their week to get their high waiver priority, if you're doing rolling waivers, is going to be on 0-2 to start, because this game is going to be very destructive to that.
Okay.
But I think he'll be a fine flex play.
Ryan?
I'm actually selling because I want to capitalize on the idiots out there that'll pay a lot for him right now.
Like in Dynasty, people are trading firsts for this shit. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as Cooper Kupp comes back, he's going to fall back to earth. So,
sure. All right. We got two more.
I guess just to say if Cooper Kupp comes back.
Fair.
Big question mark.
All right. We got two left. Michael Pittman, who went 8 for 97 and a touchdown last week. Ryan, buy or sell?
I think that's another situation where I sell, and try and get as much as I can back from him. Richardson looked really good, but Indy's just not going to be involved in a lot of game scripts like that. I think maybe they have 4, 5, or 6 more games where, you know, they look like they did week one. And I think that's the ceiling on that. So I'm going to try and capitalize on selling him right now.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's the right take as well. I think there's going to be these boom games where they play them again later this year. Obviously, it'll be a little bit different of a game script and the offense will gel. But I think what we said before is even with the RPO systems and rookie quarterbacks, Pittman is like the target on the offense. So it's going to be difficult to predict those weeks, right? He might get 9 targets, but he might only get 4 catches for 44 yards, right?
Sure.
So it's, again, a fine flex play. He shouldn't be your wide receiver too, if you listen to us. But yeah, I think like Ryan said, it's going to be inconsistent. So it's a sell.
Okay, and then last but not least, Zay Flowers, who went 9 catches, 78 yards. Ryan, is he a buy or a sell?
This one's tough, but I think I'm leaning towards selling just because of the offense he plays in.
Does Andrews come in and take a lot of those targets, you think?
I believe so, and just the fact that there's going to be a bunch of games where they're just going to run it all the time, and they're not going to need to use the pass game. There's a reason that Zay Flowers is... had such a good game. They don't really invest in wide receiver again. You got Bateman, Odell, and Flowers. And
to me, I think he's still the second option in my opinion, right? Like you don't spend high end first round draft capital on a guy who we all love during the process, right? But like he had six designed plays last year to get him, or sorry, this week to get him the ball. Granted, some of them were screenplays. But he was also the first read on 3 out of his non-designed routes. So he will see a regression in air yards, but I still think like him as like a wide receiver too. Like I would buy that because I mean, I'm also like a big Flowers truther.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That 47.6% target share is definitely not going to stick around.
I'll take 20.
So we've got the buys and sells. Let's do our numbers. This is our last numbers segment as we roll on to triple digits. Ryan, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, very quick. I just want to do a quick shout out to JJ Watt.
There you go.
One of the greatest defensive ends that we could potentially see in all of NFL. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He had 101 career sacks. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And I just wanted to give a shout out because I'm going to his home state of Wisconsin tomorrow.
Yeah.
For some R&R and some fishing.
Good for you.
He's still really involved with a lot of charities in the Midwest too. Mm-hmm. So he does give back to the community. It was so good in his career that what year was that when did he catch 3 touchdowns? Because they did, yeah. They just schemed some plays where he could get in, and they were like, screw it. We'll just do a short route, and anyone that comes and tries to tackle him, he'll just push out of the way.
Correct.
So, yeah, really quick, future Hall of Famer, J.J. Watt.
I love that he had a cabin, finger quotes, cabin, like, in the woods, and it was, like, literally a mansion with just, like, wood logs on the outside of it.
Yeah, well, part of his, like, training regimen, too, was, like, chopping wood. It's good. It's good cardio, and it's you know.
Someone would say performative.
Right. Someone once told me, I don't remember who it was, but the quote stuck with me forever. All of the Watts are, if you could turn a Letterman's jacket into a human being.
That was you. Yeah. You sent that to me in a message because we were talking shit on J.J. Watt when he got his contract, and he's like, I got to go work out. Thanks for the money. Bye. And you're like, yeah, dude, he's just a Letterman's jacket.
Damn, hell yeah. I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good. I got, Shane, you talked yours up a little bit, so I want to go first because I want you to drive us home.
All right.
And I'm going to leave work early, so I'm going to do my last number and get the fuck out. I teased this like 10 episodes ago. Today we're going to talk about what is considered the second worst draft day trade of all time, the 1999 Ricky Williams trade.
Oh.
So, like, the 1999 NFL draft was a fucking mess, but we're going to focus in on the trade specifically. I'll give you one little tidbit afterwards, but let's start in 98. In 98, the New Orleans Saints attempted to trade every single one of their draft picks to move up and get either Ryan Leaf or Peyton Manning.
Hey, you're welcome, Saints fans. Jumped on that grenade for you.
Right? So neither of them accepted the move back. So next season, the Saints and coach Mike Ditka decided to sell the farm to draft Ricky Williams. So it made sense because in college, Ricky Williams in 4 years rushed for over 6,000 yards.
Oh, my God.
That is crazy.
And scored 72 touchdowns.
That's like high school numbers, right?
Uh-huh. His senior season, he was 361 carries, 2,124 rushing yards, and 28 total touchdowns.
That's insane, dude. Like, damn. Did he play, like, with children, right?
Right? And he played at Texas, so he was whooping dudes' asses. Mike Ditka actually compared him to Walter Payton. Weirdly, some teams, kind of like what I did with Randy Moss last week, some teams thought Williams was, like, a risk because he, finger quotes, like, didn't love the game. They also were suspicious of the fact that he hired rapper Master P to be his agent.
What?
Gotta make him say,
Oh, yeah. Nah. So later on, we would find out, if you've seen the amazing Run Ricky Run documentary, I highly recommend it if you haven't. But he talks about his mental health issues in that documentary. He has social anxiety disorder. He's got borderline personality disorder, and he's got avoidant personality disorder. I can just see how the effects of those disorders would make stuffy old rich white dudes think him as a bad investment.
Especially, too, in that era where, like, mental health wasn't, like, considered, right? Like, if you told people, like, back then, they'd be like, just put a Band-Aid on it. It's not actually an issue, right?
Be a man. Anyways, Washington moves, the Saints move up from pick 12 to pick 5. They trade with Washington. So they give up pick 12. They had already given up their second to get wide receiver Eddie Kinnison. They gave up their 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th, as well as their 1st and 3rd the next season.
Jesus Christ, that's like 2 quarterbacks.
Uh-huh. And so they took Ricky Williams. Washington, with the 12 and some of this other ammo, ended up trading back up into pick 7, where the Bears were picking, and took future Hall of Famer Champ Bailey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So ironically, neither team would make the playoffs for like 8 more years or 6 more years, so none of this really mattered. Ricky Williams has an absolutely insane career, but I didn't want to spend 20 minutes talking about it. Look it up. He played everywhere. He played in Canada. There's a rule called the Ricky Williams rule in Canada where, like, if you're suspended in the NFL, you can't just, like, go play in Canada because you want to play.
That's stupid, dude. Let him play.
I agree, 100%. Let's also point out that Master P, shockingly, was totally unprepared to be a professional sports agent and negotiated an absolutely shit contract for Williams. He signed for 7 years and $11.1 million. Over $8 million of that was a signing bonus. So just like...
What?
You're just going to get $3 million over the next 7 years. He had incentives built into the contract, and if he would have hit all of his incentives, it would have been worth $68 million. But the incentives were made so insanely high that he would have had to have been like Emmitt Smith level to hit these incentives.
Oh, be Super Bowl MVP 3 years in a row.
Right, right, right. He was injured in preseason, and the injury lingered all season, so he would miss games, play a couple, miss a game, whatever. So that means he only hit one of his incentives, and that season he earned the league minimum of $125,000.
Dude, no wonder what? I quit the fucking league. I quit too.
Right? He was living in a one-bedroom apartment at the time.
Wow.
So he hated Mike Ditka, as most players tend to do, and Ditka ends up getting fired in 99. Like I said, Williams ends up having a wild, rambling career in life, and I think I speak for all of us when I say we wish the best for Ricky Williams. That's the Ricky Williams trade. I just want to point out also that in 1999, the NFL draft had five quarterbacks taken in the first round. That's happened three times. It happened in 2018 and 2021. 1983 is the only NFL draft first round that had more than five quarterbacks taken. The five quarterbacks taken in the 1999 draft were... I'm going to start with the good ones. Donovan McNabb, who had a career record of 98, 62, and 1. Do you remember when Donovan McNabb tied and he said he didn't know ties happened in the NFL? Remember that?
Is that why he's hated by Philadelphia?
No, it's because he's he's a black quarterback. Anyways. The next best record of any of the quarterbacks in that first round was 41 and 59. Dante Culpepper, who went to Minnesota. Third best record was Tim Couch, the first overall pick, who ended up going 22 and 37 to Cleveland.
Eat shit, Browns.
Tim Couch.
Somehow, this isn't the worst quarterback taken in the first round, but at pick 12, the Bears took Cade McNown from UCLA.
Okay.
That's a fake person. Never heard of him.
He went 3-12 in the NFL. There's also that famous game where all the Bears players said that they would quit if he was the starting quarterback.
Oh, that's right.
And they made him the starting quarterback, and Terrell Owens broke the NFL single-game record for receptions in a game that week.
Yep.
And also, he's the only quarterback I can think of. Well, Ben Roethlisberger and Deshaun Watson exist, but the only NFL quarterback I can confirm is banned for life from the Playboy Mansion.
What did he do?
He stalked a playmate.
Like he went to a party and then like started stalking her afterwards, or like was doing super weird shit at the mansion?
No, I think they broke up and he just kept showing up to try to see her.
Oh.
And then last but not least, the worst first round quarterback of this terrible group was career three wins, 14 losses, Akili Smith, who went to the Cincinnati Bengals. If you take all of those first round quarterbacks together, their career wins and losses, 167 wins, 184 losses, one tie. That is the 1999 NFL draft and the Ricky Williams trade.
Wow.
Good for him, man. I see a couple stuff like clips of him. He seems to be doing pretty well now. I know. I think he has like a weed podcast and like he talks about mental health a lot. So
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I think so. A lot of dudes have weed podcasts. They follow the goats.
There we go. That's true. All right, Shane, show them how it's done, baby.
All right. So, like I said, with this bit that we've been doing for a long time, sometimes we have a fun one. Sometimes we have a goofy one. Sometimes we have a traumatic one. But I was like, you know what? Let's like appreciate the gravity of the sport and like how sport brings people together and can kind of break down barriers and stuff. So my 99 is a player who was drafted in 99 draft, Dat Nguyen.
Dat Nguyen?
Dat Nguyen. So Dat Nguyen has a pretty crazy upbringing, as he was born in a refugee camp in Arkansas as his parents fled South Vietnam after the fall of Saigon.
Sure.
So Dat's dad had a radio. He got the news that the Viet Cong were close by after Saigon fell. So in the middle of the night at like midnight or 1 a.m. is per the story goes, he packed up his family and his life and he said, "We're getting on a fucking boat and we're leaving."
Cool.
So, where he was located was a small fishing village, so they didn't have access to like the military extraction. So they had to get on the boats themselves and actually get to the military vessels. So it was him and his family with like, I think seven other families is what he said, on a 40-foot boat that were accepting refugees in the middle of the night. But in the middle of this trek, the boat was being bombed by the Viet Cong. And in this kind of, I don't want to say it's a caravan, but the line of boats that were going, two of them next to Dat's family's boat were actually hit by bombs and sank.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so fortunately, Dat's family made it to America, where they took refuge in Arkansas at a refugee camp and then moved to Rockport, Texas, which was a pretty big, the Gulf of Mexico was a big transplant area for all these refugees because the American system saw that the ecosystem, or sorry, the climate was the same as kind of Vietnam, and the skill set of like fishing and that kind of stuff was more applicable, so these people could acclimate to the culture better.
Sure.
So in true blue-blooded American fashion, there was massive racial tension with this immigration of Vietnamese people due to post-war brain rot and the fact that the incoming Vietnamese refugees were skilled in fishing and crabbing and shrimping. Right. So the people of the Gulf saw this as a threat to their way of life and threatened for their careers, for these people just trying to basically make a living and survive.
They took our jobs.
There's a documentary on this on the Aggies website.
Oh, really?
I think you can watch it through ESPN Plus. So there was racial violence, supreme isolation of these people. So they just kind of had to stick to themselves, as well as language barriers. In an effort to fit in, Dat joined his high school football team when he had no idea how the game was played. He actually was handed his like uniform and he put his whole shit on backwards. Like he put his pads in the wrong area because he had like zero clue of how this worked. But he just like was like, hey, this is like how I fit in, so I'm going to just like play the game. So Dat absolutely ripped shit up as he played running back, fullback, quarterback, kicker, punter, and linebacker. So
nice.
He did it all. So before Dat's freshman year, there was a 3% participation of Asians in sports in Rockport, Texas. During his season, his senior year season, there was a 38% participation by Asians in Rockport sports.
Fuck yeah.
So he had 188 tackles his senior year.
Damn.
And there's multiple stories in the documentary that talks about this. Like they basically said like he is the reason why people started to accept the Vietnamese in this area, because like they understood, oh, I can clap for this guy because he's really good on the field. Like I kind of have to root for him as a human being too. So it brought the community together. There was a big kind of a melting pot of games where people would be like, oh, like you're just like me. You just are different in a way, right? So that was really inspiring on that part. He was recruited by multiple Power Five schools and ultimately went to A&M because he woke up one morning and God told him, gig him. So he went to A&M.
Hell yeah.
And he was the first Vietnamese player in Aggies history. He would unfortunately redshirt his first season because he came in too big on bad advice, because you have to be quote unquote bigger to play in college. So everybody named him Fat Dat.
Oh,
how tall and what was his weight, Shane?
He was, I think he was 5'10", 230.
Not tall. Yeah. Okay.
No, he just had a lot of baby fat. That was like the reference. So he kind of took this experience as like, okay, it was really humbling, because like when you're told you're like the best in the area and like the best, you're being recruited by all these teams to like, hey, you can't play this year because you're just out of shape. So he took it seriously. He was in the gym 4 hours a day from the season to the off season. And then the next season that they saw, the coaches didn't even recognize him. Like, who are you? He's like, And they named him immediate starter behind one of the most touted recruits in the NCAA at the time. But they were doing wind sprints on their final thing, and the guy rolled his ankle, so Dat got his number called.
Ooh, what?
So he would absolutely rip shit up again, and name himself basically the best defender in college. Dat would have 51 consecutive starts, and in his college career with 517 total tackles, averaging 10.7 tackles per game.
Wow.
Damn.
For an interior defensive lineman?
Yeah.
That's nasty. That's Jalen Carter.
Yeah, he had a lot of like highlight plays in bowl games where like he would have very pivotal moments of like picks, where he, at one play for the championship game, I think it was the Cotton Bowl, he caught a pick and then he was going to run it for pick six, but he was seen as getting tackled, so he lateraled it to his teammate, take the dive, and his teammate ran it in. So he was like very much of like, we are a unit, like this is how we do it. So while he was also destroying players on the field, he was a big member of his community, as he would reach out and mentoring immigrant students in Rockport, Texas, and the Aggie area, where teachers would call him up, be like, hey, dude, we got this Vietnamese kid. Like, he's super shy. He doesn't speak the language. His reading level is like 8. Like, he reads it like 8 years younger than he should. And he would just show up, teach him English, hang out with him, and just kind of show like everybody around, like, hey, listen, like, we're just people, right? Like, we're doing this. So that was really cool to see. He would enter college too big, but unfortunately, NFL draft, he would have his stock plummet due to his size because everybody thought that he was too small to play the position at a professional level compared to other bigger recruits and five-star talents, blah, blah, blah. So he was drafted in the third round by the Cowboys. So during his tenure as a Cowboy, he would lead the team in tackles three times, have a total of 516 tackles in season while missing half the year and in two seasons and eight games in a different season.
Okay.
So very efficient. And he would ultimately retire in 2006 as nagging injuries took their toll on him. And here's kind of where I'd award dump to gas him up even further. Okay. So while at A&M, he would be named first team All Big 12 3 years in a row, Aggies MVP, unanimous All-American, Defensive Player of the Year, Lombardi Award winner for Outstanding College Lineman, finalist in the Butkus Award in the most narrow vote in NCAA history, Defensive Player of the Game in the 98 Cotton Bowl for 12 tackles and a pick. That's the one I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
In 98, he won the Big 12 Athlete of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, the Lambert Trophy, and he helped the Aggies win the Big 12 Championship. In 2012, he was voted all-time Big 12 and is basically known as the best defensive player in A&M history. He was inducted to the A&M Athletics Hall of Fame, Texas Sports Hall of Fame, Cotton Bowl Hall of Fame, and the College Football Hall of Fame. Fuck. So he continues to give back to his community because he serves chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A, where he is now a franchise owner and operator in Fort Worth, Texas.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah. That's
Dat Win. Yeah, Dat Win. I don't condone Chick-fil-A's anything, but I condone Dat Win.
He's religious, so I mean, what can you
do? Well, I read when I was teaching in Rockford, I taught a book of poetry to middle schoolers that was written by a girl who escaped Vietnam and moved to Alabama because that was like one of the big hubs of refugee camps. Like, we have all these really interestingly spaced spots across America where we've taken in refugees. Did you know that Bartlett, Illinois is like ground zero for Cambodians that fled the Khmer Rouge?
Really?
That's crazy. See, in this like this whole Dat Nguyen saga, I had zero context that like Vietnamese people lived in the South. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Like, my brain is either.
But now that you said that, it makes total sense because that's all that is in like Floribama area. It's just fishing, small fishing communities and oil communities and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, and Houston being right off the Gulf has a huge Vietnamese population.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So hell yeah. Rock on. Way to fucking. I love when like cultural like communities pop up and where they move and how they go and where they go and do all whatever. Super interesting.
Yeah, share that documentary in the Discord chat.
Yeah,
Shane,
yeah,
when you can.
I'll pull the name.
I'll try and watch it.
Cool. All right, Ryan, this is our last one ever.
Yeah. So being the last number, I felt like it needed to be a Chicago Bear.
We're out of numbers after this. No more numbers.
I know. And since we're up there, we're still going with defensive line. Let's talk about someone who couldn't even play organized sports between grades 7 and 10 because of a horrible, horrible accident. Someone that fell from a tree and broke a lot of stuff, and he just literally, he was held out of sports. He couldn't play because of fragility, but this guy is 6'5", 264 pounds, winner of the Super Bowl in 1985 with the Chicago Bears. Let's talk about Dan Hampton.
The Danimal.
All right. So like I said, he was injured in sixth grade, and he couldn't play organized sports because of this. So his parents were like, all right, you got to do something. You know, you're big. You're going to maybe do something in sports later on in your life, but you got to do something to keep yourself busy. So his parents were like, why don't you join the band and play some musical instruments, which I thought was really cool. So he initially started playing saxophone, but then started playing like bass and guitar, probably because, you know, he was a big guy. So more than likely he was kind of popular, and he was like, well, guitar and bass get more chicks than the saxophone. So
factual. This is factual.
This is fact. And in fact, like later on, he still like kept up like playing, I guess, throughout his life. And between 87 and 90 when he was a part of the Chicago Bears, he actually didn't like the Super Bowl shuffle that they came up with. He kind of thought it was disrespectful. So he started a band where he played with Walter Payton, who played the drums. Otis Wilson was the lead vocalist.
There we go. Mama's boy, Otis.
Sean Gale was saxophone and voice. Okay. Gary Nyland was guitar and voice. And Kurt Frazier was also on guitar. This band was called the Chicago Six. And they played in the off seasons between seasons. I don't know what their really goal was, but it just says that Hampton was never really a big, he thought it was too over the top, the Super Bowl shuffle, like too arrogant.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to try a little with something else. But so he was born in Oklahoma City, but eventually went to play college football at Arkansas. He was a part of the Razorback team that won the Orange Bowl in 78, 31-6 against Oklahoma. And that was also a year, I guess, that several key Razorbacks players were suspended because of locker room shit. Who knows? It was the 70s. That doesn't really go into a lot of details.
Imagine getting suspended in the 1970s.
As a senior, he logged 98 tackles. 18 of those were behind the line of scrimmage. He was elected to the University of Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame in 1991. Was also voted in 94 to the All-Century team for University of Arkansas Razorbacks. And is also one of the top 50 greatest athletes to ever go to that school.
There you go.
And actually, it says that Ditka kind of watched his career when he came out of Arkansas as one of the reasons that they drafted him. He was drafted, I think, pick 4 overall in the 79 NFL draft and had a great career. Like I said, winning the Super Bowl in 85 with the Bears. That was probably the highlight of the career because the Bears didn't really do much after that. No. Because they were always a predominantly running team and just had always crap quarterbacks.
Can I also point out, before we get too far away from the Super Bowl shuffle, I want to point two things out. First off, it was absolutely disrespectful and over the top. It was 3 minutes of hold my fucking nuts. Like,
yeah,
that's what it was. And then two, the last thing I want to bring up about the Super Bowl shuffle. Shane, I don't know if you know this, but that shit was recorded in like week 14 of the regular season. It wasn't like they didn't even win yet. Yeah,
that's a, dude. I don't think that's I don't think that's disrespectful at all. I think that fucking rules.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, he has a bunch of accolades. His best career sack year was 11 and a half sacks. That was the year before the Super Bowl 84, and that year it says that the NFL record for the most sacks in a season. So not even the Super Bowl year, but 1984, they had 72 sacks as a team.
Yep.
Damn.
Also, winning the Super Bowl, it says that in the middle of 85, Hampton moved from right defensive tackle to left because of William Perry. If you ever talk to or hear stories about linemen, like, their left and their right sides is a completely different game because you tend to be stronger on one side. And to make the transition from left to right just shows, like, not many people can do it, but if you can, it just shows how all around a great player you can be. Let's see. He retired in 1990, obviously got the George S. Halage Courage Award. He was selected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2002. He was inducted with Washington Redskins head coach George Allen, Oakland Raiders tight end Dave Casper, Bills quarterback Jim Kelly, and Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver John Stallworth.
Fuck the Steelers.
Now, Dan Hampton is still doing a lot of like announcing today and stuff. He's been on a bunch of shows. But he also had a couple run-ins with the law the year he was inducted in the Hall of Fame. So this was May 22nd. So when is the Hall of Fame ceremony?
Like August.
Okay. So this was before the Hall of Fame. He was sentenced in Arkansas for his third DWI in 6 years.
Yikes.
He got a sentence of 1 week in jail, $1,000 fine, and was ordered to attend alcohol education courses. 2 years ago, in 2021, he was arrested in Indiana on a charge of operating a vehicle while intoxicated, and later was reported that his blood alcohol level was 0.19.
Oh my God.
Isn't 0.25 like you die?
It's like, right. I think it's like 0.3 is
okay.
You're dead.
Yeah. But, you know, because he's a big man and he's white, he still has announcing jobs and, you know, stuff like that. He still does the show too, right, Tony?
Oh yeah.
He does the post game for Bears, right?
He had some hot takes this week about how the Bears looked last week about benching Eddie Jackson.
Okay. He does charities too, for kids. He does like a golf tournament and stuff like that. One of the great quotes that I saw from him that he actually apologized for. He was said, this must have been a Bears game where they were playing New Orleans, and he said, hit that town like Hurricane Katrina.
Oh God. God damn it.
But like I said, he later apologized. Big man, great career. Look, sounds like he likes to live life to the fullest. That is former 1985 Super Bowl winner, Hall of Fame, Dan Hampton.
It's crazy to me that 85 Bears defense will, after Steve McMichael gets inducted as a legacy member, that 85 yeah. Bears defense will have three Hall of Famers on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everyone except the Fridge is in the Hall of Fame. Steve McMichael, Dan Hampton, Richard Dent, all Hall of Famers.
Why is he not in the Hall of Fame?
Because he sucked.
But he caught the best defensive lineman touchdown ever. And his name was the Refrigerator.
Yeah, he's the most notable, right? Like, you got to get on notoriety by yourself, right?
Yeah, but the reason why he was even a thing at all is because you're going to get single blocked when you have three Hall of Famers lining up next to you. Like, you're going to do true. Fine.
Yeah.
So, hey, that's a fucking wrap, bro. That's a wrap on the numbers. Thanks for taking this journey, guys.
Yeah. Always.
I'll find some creative ways to bring up more numbers in later episodes, but that is officially like 1 through 99.
This is like end of watch. Like when all those cops post that dramatic shit on their Facebooks, like I protected you while you slept. This is my end of watch. So we're going to go put our service revolvers into a drawer somewhere and hop into a commercial. And we will see you on the other side. And goodbye. Perfect. Flawless, as always. We did our Superflex lineup. We're sparing you the rod and spoiling you the child.
Oh, it's so sexy.
Ryan, why don't you go ahead and tell us, let's read the roster, and then we'll chat about a couple of the guys, and we'll move on.
Somehow, we did not pick Tua and Tyreek. I kind of don't like... when Miami plays New England, even though generally Miami does better, but Belichick's definitely going to try and scheme to get rid of Tyreek. That's just what he does.
He doesn't want to get 36 points scored on him every week.
Right. Right. Yeah. So this week we went with Herbert again, and instead of Mike Williams, we paired him with Keenan Allen. I think that's a better play. Allen looked pretty boss last week.
We watched the Saints run wild over that secondary.
Right. We also went, we paid down a little bit at 8,000. We went with Jared Goff. and we paired him with St. Brown, obviously. I think that game script is, like I was telling these guys earlier, is going to be top four highest scoring games of the week, Detroit versus Seattle.
We also watched Seattle get absolutely torched over the middle.
Right. Yes. We also went with another Detroit Lion. We went with David Montgomery, who this week, one of my top five bets of the week is a David Montgomery touchdown. Tony's got his, what, rushing over? What is
that? We all independently bet on David Montgomery. Yeah. I took his rushing over at 55.5 on FanDuel, the sports book. And so he's going to get a tutty.
Yeah. So that seems really spicy right now, right? So we've got Goff, Montgomery, Keenan Allen, St. Brown, and Herbert. Guess who else we were able to afford to get us monster points? We were able to slot in CMC.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, against the Rams this week. It's just going to be his show. Like, they probably won't even have to pass. All right? So, fade Ayuk, fade Debo. We paid down a lot at tight end and went with Luke Musgrave. We know that Watson's not playing this week. So, it seemed like he's developed a little bit of chemistry with Love. He had, I think, around 50 yards last week. I don't know how many targets, maybe five, four,
five. He should have had more, man. There was a wide open play where Love missed him. Yeah.
And it's a good opportunity for him to get a touchdown, too, in this game. And to round it out at flex, we went with someone who's going to be starting this week against a horrible Houston team. We went with Zach Moss. So I think this lineup is super spicy.
So, Shane, when we cash, when this lineup wins first place, who's it going to be because of?
I think it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, man. I think even though he was 8,100, I still think he's got the ability to be wide receiver one this week just because how we saw the Seahawks get absolutely demolished by Puka over the middle. I don't think their pressure rate was very good either last week, right?
It was not.
Yeah, so you give Goff time in the pocket. He's just going to keep chunking up ploys. I don't know. I don't see there's a world where we like can't get 20 points out of Amon-Ra.
Okay.
Especially in a game like Ryan said that we're anticipating scoring a lot of points, right? Like if it's going to be a shootout, right. Amon-Ra gets 12 targets, we're cooking.
Yep. We love the matchup plays Moss against Houston. We love Musgrave against Atlanta. Atlanta got shredded by the dynamo that is Hayden Hurst. So I think this is a fun lineup. Let's do our closing segments. Let's do official TH Fantasy Podcast business. And of course, that begins with
Ryan's mid-tier, kind of shitty, tight end of the week.
All right. So this week, I'm looking at a few guys. This one guy, Tony identified earlier, he seems like he's really getting some chemistry with Dak. I'm going with Jake Ferguson. All right.
Big Ferg.
I know. We saw New York Jets defense, you know, totally pick apart the Bills like last week. But that was because of a lot of stupid, arrogant play by Josh Allen. Like, he was just throwing it downfield and didn't even fucking care who he was throwing it to.
Those were Hail Mary plays of, like, the game's ending, right? Of, like, no, dude,
and that was in, like, it was
down, like
the second
fine.
Quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a reason Whitehead had three interceptions. But Ferguson had seven targets last week, and it looks like Dak's going to rely on some of these shorter passes, especially going up against these corners that they have in Dallas. Why try to burn them downfield and just throw a five-yard pass and let them get some yards after the catch?
I think this is going to be a game very similar to last week's and potentially even worse because Zach Wilson's starting, right?
So yeah.
I think if they're just going to have to keep chunking up plays to kill the clock and they're not going to be able to run the ball against a really good rush defense, I think this is a perfect game for Ferguson to get 8+ targets.
I love Ferguson this week. And he's also only 5,000 in your main slate, so it'll allow you to get some better talent at other positions. All right. Here's a complete dart throw.
Let's go.
But, you know, I like to follow my gut, all right? And something tells me that Waller is not going to play this entire game.
Right?
So guess who's going to make a resurgence, all right? Daniel Bellinger will get involved this week. He showed last year that without Waller's presence, he was the lead tight end. And Jones kind of likes him, you know, averaging between 4 and 7 targets a game. If Waller goes out and you guys want to take a dart throw at 4,800, put in Daniel Bellinger in your lineups. Because guess what? The Giants are not going to score 0 points again this week, especially against Arizona. And they're
going to score 3.
No, my thought
seven,
is
sorry,
gonna,
seven. Sorry.
My thought is they're going to come out and just push on the gas pedal because they're so embarrassed after last week.
Yeah, Daboll's right. On a warpath this week.
Right. So I'm thinking could be the exact opposite, 40-0 Giants. But
do you know who looked really good against the Arizona defense last week? Logan Thomas.
Yeah, that's right. They played Washington.
All
right,
Logan fucking Thomas looked good. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about starting a Giants tight end.
All right. Finally, guys. Someone I was key in the offseason. I took a complete dart throw on this guy, and he had 5 targets last week in an offense that looks really good, who beat Kansas City. Go with Sam Laporta. All right. He's the new tight end number 1 in Detroit. And it looks like this offense is not going to stop with Montgomery, St. Brown, and their secondary receivers like Josh Reynolds. Laporta is going to get a decent amount of targets, especially if they play fast paced this week against a Seattle team. Like I said, that could be top 4 highest scoring games of the week. He's going to get at least 5 targets. I think he's going to potentially get more like 7 or 8 potentially this week. So I am really liking Sam Laporta. That is the highest salary. He's at 5,100. I'm shocked he is only at 5,100. I thought he'd be around the mid fives, close to like 6, just because of his involvement in last week's game. I get it. FanDuel is still taking, you know, some liberties right now because he's still a rookie. But mark my words, you're gonna want to play him this week because 5-6 weeks away, he's gonna be broaching that 6,000, if not more, mark on tight ends, you know, joining the ranks of potentially Evan Ingram or Kyle Pitts or Gerald Everett. He could be up there. So that's it for my mid-tier kind of shitty tight ends of the week, who may not be kind of shitty in a few weeks. We'll see.
Prognostication. All right, Shane, give us your props.
All right, so last week I did pretty good 50% of the time. I just paired things up with the wrong prop because what the fuck was that Cleveland-Cincinnati game?
Ugh.
So we're going back to the well. My first over is Justin Herbert over 277.5 passing yards at times 1.77 on Sleeper. Tennessee allowed the least amount of points to the running back position last week, allowing 2.6 yards per catch and a pressure rate of over 57.9% last week. Herbert has a QB rating of 105.8 with the 4th highest pressure rate with last week with 10 hurries and 14 pressures. They're not going to really be able to run the ball with Eckler not being there. And Tennessee gave the 2nd most points to the position of the wide receiver position last week behind the Chargers with a 72% catch rate and a 14.6 yard per reception and the 2nd most points given to the slot. It's a Keenan Allen week too.
Well, so what was that yardage line?
Over 277.5 okay. As of last night is when I did it.
Okay.
The 2nd one is Lamar Jackson over 45 rushing yards at 1.67 times. So Cincinnati gave up 5 rushing attempts for 45 yards to Deshaun Watson last week in their blowout. Lamar had 6 attempts, 5 scrambles, and 1 design run last week for a total of 38 yards. With their RB1 out for the season in a highly contested matchup against the 8th highest pressure defense, I'm projecting more scrambles against the 4th best secondary per last week and for Lamar to utilize his legs when the plays break down and there's no safety valve of Dobbins.
Okay.
And then my last one, I know Ryan said the shitty tight end of the week touchdown is Jake Ferguson, but I think 2 props can exist at once. And that is a Dak over of 0.5 interceptions at 1.99.
Oh, you can always parlay that.
So we saw how Josh Allen was demolished by the Jets last week where his bonehead plays and the Jets pressured at 34%. And while Dak was pressured at 48% last week and had a QB rating of 40. When he was pressured. So mistakes are going to happen in this game, especially with that defensive line. And I don't know if the ability of the run game getting started, and even with a shorter intermittent pass success of Dak, something's going to happen. And he's good for one. I know everybody clowned on Dak for all his INTs, and I think this is where his first one of the season kicks off.
Okay, reasonable. So we've got Herbert over 277.5 passing yards, Lamar Jackson over 45 rushing yards, and Dak Prescott over on half an interception.
Yes.
Okay. And then we've also got Big Ferg, Daniel Bellinger, and Sam Laporta. It's a bunch of actionable advice, and let's just, I'm wrapping that up because I'm about to feed you some bullshit, all right?
Uh-oh.
I'm not going to mince words. Last week fucking sucked. Zach Charbonnet, clearly the B option in that backfield to start. Ken Walker had like crazy high snap shares, routes run, all that shit. And also, by the way, seven Denver pass catchers had more snaps than Marvin Mims.
Boo, Sean Payton doesn't know shit about football. That's why you lost the game.
Idiot. So did I learn my lesson? You bet your ass that I did not. We are going back to the rookie well this week. Yes. And we are gonna put in Tajay Spears for the princely sum of $4,700.
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah, what was up with that snap share?
I watched that game and he's just the third down 2 minute back. He's both.
It just amazed me later in the week when they were like, yeah, he actually outsnapped Derrick Henry. I'm like, what the hell?
Well, Vrabel also said Tannehill sucked ass last week and he needs to clean up his process. So
I don't think, obviously, he's not going to continue to outsnap Derrick Henry, no. But his pass game usage is going to continue to keep him relevant in the games where the Titans are behind. One of my favorite bets this week, it's my millionaire bet. I wrote about it for Football Absurdity. Bet of the week has pretty much been the Chargers beating the shit out of Tennessee.
I fucking hope so.
I don't see a chance of Tennessee winning that game, and it's not because I truly believe that much in the Chargers. It's because I believe that much in the shittiness of Ryan Tannehill. We talked about this during the offseason. How many games in until another quarterback steps in there? If he throws another three interceptions, like you said, Shane, you said like after the bye in week 6 or whatever, right?
Yep. Yep.
And like, if he keeps throwing three interceptions, it might be sooner than that.
They're going to pass a D-hop. Staley, just listen now. That's all they're going to do.
And honestly, like, I think the Chargers are going to kick the shit out of Tennessee. And I think Spears is going to outsnap Henry once again as the pass-catching back. I think a 5-catch game is reasonable. We watched the Chargers get thrown on last week, and it will happen again. But since Tannehill's arm is done, I think the checkdowns go to Tajay, and I wouldn't be surprised if he sneakily scores you 10 points this week.
Nice.
Tajay Spears, yeah. who needs an ACL? I don't know if any of y'all saw any of his tape. He's got pop. He's still got the pop.
I mean, what's the average career of an NFL player? 3 years?
Yep.
So, I mean, glass cannon his ass while the rebuild starts.
There you go. All right, let's take a trip. Let's take a trip to close the show.
All right. We're going on a trip this week, guys, and it's hard. It's hard to pick some of these cities, all right? But I found a gem this week, all right? And it's amazing how the Missouri River is so long, and like much of these cities come in tied with the Lewis and Clark Expedition. This is by where the Lewis and Clark Expedition was. It ties in because at the same time that Lewis and Clark was doing their expedition of the Missouri River, Zebulon Pike was doing his exploration of the Mississippi River.
Is Zebulon Pike the god in Scientology?
I thought so. This was a Star Trek reference.
Hey, did you know real quick, if I could flex a little history knowledge here, Meriwether Lewis had an awful fucking life, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you know that he got shot in the ass with an arrow early on in the expedition? So most of the time they were in a boat, he was laying face down.
Oh, wow.
And then, like, he had either... Historians debate whether or not he committed suicide because... Or if he was murdered, because if he did commit suicide, he fucked it up, like, 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways, sorry. Go on.
So, let's take a trip this week. I want to go to a town in Iowa We're going to go to Burlington, Iowa. All right.
Okay.
So like I said, this is located on the Mississippi River because Zebulon Pike originally, yeah, he planted the first U.S. flag in this town on Iowa soil. At the time, this was part of the Wisconsin Territory until later the state was developed. It is beautiful city. When it's said that when Zebulon Pike first got there, he was enamored with the just how the city and the bluffs rose from the riverside. And he was so enamored with the way these bluffs looked that he was like, this has got to be a town. I'm going to report back to the U.S. government. We got to make a fort here. And this was one of the first towns they planted the U.S. flag in Iowa. They started John Jacob Astor in 1829, started a fur trading post here, and later the settlement officially became Burlington, Iowa in 1833. And actually the first lot, get this, was bought for $50, all right, by John Gray. And because he was the first person to buy land in this new fort settlement town, he was able to name it. And he named it Burlington after the capital of Vermont, which is where he was from.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the coat factory.
No, that's from, yeah.
No. Surprisingly, Burlington Coat Factory did not originate in Burlington, Iowa.
That's too bad.
Actually, the name Hawkeye State came from this town because they named their first newspaper the Hawkeye and Iowa Patriot.
Of course they did.
Right. This was a big railroad town because it was a big connection from Chicago. And actually, the Burlington National Railroad was named after this town. Get this. All right. You're going to be amazed. The first Aldi store, the first Aldi.
Whoa.
1976 was in Burlington, Iowa.
Let's go, Iowa. Woo.
Right.
There we go.
The Case Corporation, if you do not know anything about the Case Corporation, they make industrial, like, backhoes and landscape equipment and stuff like that. They're based in Burlington, and it's the only plant in the U.S. to produce the Case version of the backhoe. It's known as the backhoe capital of the world.
Damn. Wait, real quick, Shane, they got Aldi in California?
They did for a little bit, and I think they all went away. I think it's like Target in Canada, where it's like, this shit didn't work out.
That's crazy, because Aldi is literally just not name brand Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's. No, there's a couple. They're not super big, but I think they're like more based in like bigger cities. Yeah, okay. it's like Southern California and then like nowhere.
Sure.
So Iowa does not have any professional sports teams, other than like minor league baseball. College basketball. Burlington High School actually has 3 men's basketball national championships. They also are host to a minor league team, the Burlington Bees, who used to be affiliated with the MLB, but now plays in the like Frontier League. That's the one who like the Schaumburg Boomers play in, Tony, and stuff.
Sure, sure.
They're not affiliated with the MLB, but it's just a place for the MLB to pull for scouts to look at and potentially find diamonds in the rough. Let's look at some famous people from Burlington, Iowa. All right. Let's look at Arabella Mansfield, the first female lawyer in the United States.
Damn.
How about Dr. Wallace Carruthers, the inventor of nylon?
Ooh.
All right. How about Wayne Duke, the commissioner of the Big Ten from 71 to 89?
Huge.
Everyone knows the show I Love Lucy. William Frawley, who's one of their friends, Fred, is from Burlington, Iowa.
Okay.
Did you know that Fly Me to the Moon was written by Burt Howard, who was born in Burlington, Iowa? That's Fly fun. Me to the Moon.
That's classic.
I thought that was a Frank Sinatra song. Oops.
Well, he covered it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because right, that's right. He made it famous.
Yeah, it's a jazz standard, right?
It's a jazz standard from the 30s and 40s. And then Sinatra famously sang it in the 50s.
You guys are much more cultured than I am.
Robert Noyce, co-founder of Intel, who is also credited with inventing the microchip, is from Burlington, Iowa.
Okay.
All right. But here's what you're probably asking yourself, like, right now, like, what the fuck does this town have to do with football? All right.
Sam LaPorta.
Well, he went to Iowa. He went to the Iowa Hawkeyes, who was in Iowa City, which is just south of Cedar Rapids, which is a little ways away from this town. But anyway, Tony or Shane, can you tell me who won the Super Bowl from the 1999 season?
That was the Rams.
That is correct.
Nice. So
the 1999 season, the Rams won the Super Bowl. And guess who is from Burlington, Iowa?
I don't think it was Isaac Bruce.
No. Kurt Warner. One of the famous Cinderella stories from rags to riches. All right.
That's funny because I was like, there's no way it's Kurt Warner. But
no, nope. It is. All right. He's from Burlington, Iowa. He played college ball at Northern Iowa University from 1990 to
1993. Okay.
So he was all right in college, and it was actually signed by Green Bay in 1994, but was released before the regular season started. So that was his first transgression into the NFL. He got released. So then he went on to, like, work at a Hy-Vee as, like, a stock boy in, like, Iowa for a little bit, and then was like, I got this football itch. So he went on to play for the Iowa Barnstormers after he was cut from Green Bay in the Arena Football League. He is the only player to be named the NFL MVP and the Super Bowl MVP in the same year. After his stint with the Barnstormers. So this was like 3 or 4 years. Like, he was drafted in 94 by Green Bay and didn't get into the NFL until 1998. So he played like 3-4 years with the Barnstormers and set a bunch of records with the Barnstormers. And
he probably played with my guy I had last week or 2 weeks ago.
Right. He's the only player in history to be in the NFL Hall of Fame and the Arena League Hall of Fame.
Let's All go, right. dude.
Mm-hmm. Right? So he got his first landing spot in 1998 with the Rams. He was a backup that year behind, like, two other quarterbacks. But because of injury, the following year would become the starter in 99, when just so happened they won the Super Bowl that year.
The greatest show on turf.
Yeah. And also, I forgot to say, too, like, when he was with the Barnstormers, he was making $5.50 an hour stocking shelves, like, at Hy-Vee. Like I said, he ended up being like he was doing that and, like, being a graduate, like, assistant coach at Northern Iowa, his alumnus. In 96 and 97, he led the Barnstormers to two Arena Bowl appearances. He actually has a connection to the Bears, Tony. He tried out for the Bears in 97, the year before he was picked up by the Rams, but he actually got a spider bite before this tryout on his honeymoon, and he couldn't attend the tryout.
I fucking hate this franchise.
He could have been a Chicago Bear, but then probably would have never been one of the greatest players.
That's true.
That spider said, "Hey, bro, I did Peter Parker a favor. I'm saving your ass."
Yep. And he actually did so well in the Arena League for the Barnstormers that in 2000, they released a video game called Kurt Warner's Arena Football Unleashed. All right. Damn. I don't remember playing this ever. I don't think you do either.
No.
But I'd never heard of it. He's the first quarterback, the first one in NFL history to throw 400 or more yards in Super Bowl. And that was in Super Bowl 34, the one they won.
Sick.
Tom Brady broke that record in Super Bowl 51.
Not surprised.
But he was the first one to do it. He has in NFL history the highest rate of games with 300 or more passing yards. Guess what the percentage of games he threw 300 or more yards?
Was it 50?
A little bit less.
25?
42. Jeez. Wow.
That's like better than Tom Brady. That's better than any quarterback.
Yeah.
I just a little bit about Kurt Warner. That's why I only did a little bit about JJ Watt, because I was like, half of this geography is going to turn into a Kurt Warner segment. But
that's awesome.
When I found out, like, I originally found this out because I was like, let's look up what happened the season 1999 NFL season. And then I did some more rabbit hole stuff, and I'm like, holy crap, Kurt Warner is from this town. There's a decent amount to talk about this town. So that's how I chose to talk about this week. I chose to talk about Burlington, Iowa, and one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, Kurt Warner.
Love it. That's a great way to end it.
Go corn.
Yep.
We did it. We did it. We're the people of the corn.
Yeah, but Shane, have you ever had corn from Iowa? It's like superior. It's so good.
I'll have to do that next time I come out.
Sweet like corn. If you ever come out in like August, you'll get the finest sweet corn from Iowa. Illinois's got some good shit too, but it's just sweeter in Iowa for some reason. And I know this for a fact because one of my brother's best friend has her dad has a farm in Iowa, and they bring corn to us like every summer, and it's just blows all the corn in Illinois out of the water.
There you go. All right, so that was 99. We made it. Ryan's going off the grid next week. We'll figure out something to bring to you. And then I think when Ryan comes back, so 2 weeks, we can do our 100th episode spectacular. So keep coming back. Thanks to everyone that's joined us through this journey. It's been a ton of fun. I got nothing else other than good night.
So that's good night. Man. Enjoy the games.
Yeah.
Win big.
Hopefully they're better than last week.
If Christian Kirk doesn't reemerge this week, I'm going to be so upset.
All right. Pray for Christian. Good night.